Ibra di testa, Tonali, gol! Sandro! Meritato! Sandro!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrood.
What's up guys, glad to be back. As you can see, I got a new microphone, so hopefully my audio sounds better. Tell me if it does, tell me if it doesn't. As you can see, we got a full house, but we'll start with Madison below me.
Yeah. Nothing new over here.
And we've got a special guest. Martino is back on the pod for the first time in, like, I don't know, might be a few months, I guess.
Yeah. My face has been all over the channels, though. So if I've probably been annoying you with the shorts and Instagram. And
it's not your Instagram that annoys me.
I don't know what annoys you. One day it's something, another day it's another thing. I can't figure you out. It's got to be living in the cold weather. That's what it is. And you just take it out.
Fair point. Yeah,
that isn't false.
That was me thinking we were going to have a really nice, positive end of season recap, but instead these two below are going to war. That's fine. Bottle that energy up for what's about to come. Before we dive into this week's episode, just a reminder to check out the stuff that we're doing on Substack. You can find a link to that in the description on whatever platform you're listening on, or you'll be able to find it in our tweets. Doing some good content over there. Literally just before we recorded, Sky have released a report saying that Cardinale and Maldini had a bit of a meeting, and during that, it became apparent that their visions need to align in terms of how the future looks. If you subscribe to our Substack, you will not find that a surprise, because it's something that we reported last week. We're putting stuff out on there that we can't necessarily post on the website and put in the public domain. So go and check that out, because we've got some good stuff on there. Isaac's doing a great job with it. So without further ado, let's dive into this week's episode. It's our quietest in a long time. We've just got one game to recap. We've got none to preview. And in a way, I suppose we've got a career to recap as well. So that's not going to be easy. But the 2022-23 season has officially drawn to a close. We won 3-1 against Hellas Verona at San Siro. Before we dive into what everybody, of course, wants and expects us to talk about, which is Ibrahimovic's retirement and his farewell ceremony, I do want to make everyone aware that we'll be doing a separate bonus episode on him, where we go back through his career, not only his two spells at Milan, but I guess what he brought to the game of football, but obviously with an emphasis on his what was it, like 4.5 years with us, and how he helped transform this young group. But before that, let's do the game itself. Preseason training exercise, anyone?
Yeah, this shit was boring for the first half. I mean, like, it was just, you could tell no one on our end had anything to play for other than just, like, you know, wanting to bookend the season with some wins. Obviously, Verona needed a win to stay up or some other stuff. Now they got to go to this playout. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty standard. Not much really happened the first half. Was Giroud's penalty in the first half, or did it come second half?
Yeah, 5 minutes before. Yeah.
Yeah, so there was that, obviously, and it was a great taken penalty, but outside of that, not a whole lot in the first half to report on.
No, I remember, I think it was in the second half, and I was just like on my phone, and I said to my wife, I'm like, I'm not even watching the game. Like, it's just not exciting. You'd think a team that is facing relegation would be trying a whole lot harder. Neither of us looked bothered, but we somehow got 3 goals, so...
It was like 83% possession at the half for Milan.
Yep.
Like, it wasn't even close. Like, how do you not even try and go for 50-50 balls? Like, it's just the pressing from Verona was just terrible. I've never seen a team like, I remember, what was it, Cagliari? Like, a couple of years ago when we clinched top four on the final day against Atalanta, they just salvaged relegation like an hour or two before that match. And they were playing harder and better than what we saw from Verona. And now they have to go to this playoff too, because what was it? Dybala basically threw them a lifeline and they couldn't do anything with it. I mean, Leao, just the overall, I don't know, just the aggressiveness from their goalkeeper was lacking too on Rafa's second goal. Like, just how late he was to come out to that. And kudos to Salamakers on the assist though too. That was actually a pretty decent pass, but I mean, who cares? Stat padding for Leao. Now fans could just beef with Napoli fans that he scored more than the MVP. I think that's really just what that's going to come down to. So
yeah, 100%. For me, it was just having Liao be top goal scorer over Giroud. Once Giroud scored the penalty, I was like, shit, Liao has to get two. And thankfully he did.
Another pen versus relegation side.
Yeah, exactly.
Five goals in three games for Giroud. Yeah. Obviously, the hat-trick against an already relegated side. And then that penalty against the team relegation threatened. And then the winner against Juve, which was
fantastic.
That was basically him in a nutshell, though, is it not? He bookends a really important goal with stat padding against lesser sides. But look, you know, I suppose goals are goals. And I thought this was a strange one. Obviously, for us, it was difficult because any little thread that we could hang on to in terms of being fully motivated and fired up for this game was kind of snatched away on Saturday night with Inter winning against Torino. That meant that we couldn't finish above them in the table. And I think that would have been our final real motivation to go out and end the season on a win. Pioli said in his pre-match press conference, we want to get to 70 points. We want to give the 70,000 fans a happy note to sign off the season with. We also want to get the most home points apart from Napoli. These are all like arbitrary statistics. It's really hard when the players are already thinking about what's coming after the game and obviously plans for the summer and whatnot. But we really dominated in that first half. Verona, I have this theory that Verona were banking on Spezia losing against Roma, which they did. So they came and sat in a really, really, really deep block, like probably the deepest we've seen all season. And that says a lot. But they did manage to frustrate us for 40 minutes and then an absolute piece of moronic defending. I call it defending. It was just an attempted challenge from, I believe it was Ngonje, booted through Brahim's leg. Stonewall penalty for me. No arguments at all. I had people in my Twitter mentions saying that was soft. It's a Stonewall penalty by the letter of the law.
I didn't recognize it live. Like, obviously, fast and they're hitting ankles. Like, live, you don't see it unless you're really spot on that. And so I was like, okay, I don't know what the call is. But once they did the VAR review, like, there was no argument. You know, it was obvious. And personally, I thought the second one was as well that didn't get reviewed or given. But, you know, at that point, like, it didn't really make a difference on the game. But it would just be nice to get penalties again when they're deserved, you know.
Mm-hmm. We've had Valeri was staring right at it.
Mm. Yeah, he was as close as I am to the screen.
Saturnian Lesage is his name, but he had the screenshot of it. He was like, he's like, how are you standing right there? And they have to go to the video review. That also took a little bit. It took like a good 30 to 45 seconds just to be like, okay, now you have to go and check it. And then the non-handball on Rafa's header. If anyone watched the FA Cup over the weekend, Grealish's handball was essentially the same exact thing. Even then, I think Jack's wasn't as intentional as this one. The angles that I saw were just his arm was across his body and it was up for this game. But I don't know. Thank God this game didn't matter. Otherwise, we wouldn't have heard the end of it for like 6 months, probably.
Oh, yeah. Important to pick it out even still, though. we better get the rub of the green mark next season. Faraone was the guy who charged the shot down with the handball. And there were even some shouts from some of our players that he should have been penalised for a foul for their equaliser. I don't want to dwell on it too much. I think the catalogue of errors that led up to that equalising goal were bad enough and they deserve more attention. Calabria completely switched off, allowed... was it Juric, I think it might have been? I can't remember who it was who lofted the crossover. Faraone, back post run. He did put his arm up to jump sort of off Teo, and he did shove him into the net, but I think Teo's got to be stronger there.
It was extremely soft. Knowing everything about Teo, you know for a fact he's like, oh, like I feel contact, I'm just going to go down. You know, that's what it was. Because as soon as he jumped, he didn't like even try to go for the ball. He immediately threw his head back and he was like, that thing, you know. So, to me, that's soft. I don't like that style of defending. You know, you go for the ball, and if there's contact, it'll get called. But don't. Yeah. If you make a scene out of it, I think more and more referees in today's game are less likely to call because we have VAR. You know, back in the previous era without VAR, you got to kind of sell it so that they recognize that there is contact. But in today's game, everything's being reviewed. Every goal scoring play is being reviewed. Like, if there's contact, they're going to see it. You know, well, hopefully. They obviously call the handball. So.
No guarantees.
I thought it was just interesting. I didn't even realize. Like, I was watching the substitution, and then all of a sudden they scored, and I was like, "Have we even resumed play yet?" Like, It was odd when that happened.
Right. Yeah. Well, substitution, just real quick. Sorry to interrupt, but CDK, I mean, that's just kind of summed up a lot for him. The second that he subs on, they end up conceding and everybody just points the finger in that direction, yeah, whether or not it's his fault. I didn't get a chance to see. Yeah. He'll go with that. Give it to him. I didn't watch too much of the second half, but I heard he looked pretty decent. I saw one goal that I guess you could say scraped by the front of it. Maybe if someone's just on the other half of it, Ollie, your piece that you wrote was great, and you showed that YouTube channel that basically showed there was some silver linings in his season this year, and there were some positive runs, but again, that was all in 2022 for the most part, because it was very absent during this calendar year. But I mean, just some energy, anything was just good to see.
I thought he looked really well actually when he came on. Obviously, no end product, so it's all for naught. But
yeah, right.
It was nice, especially seeing Brahim come on originally. You know, Brahim was very frustrating this game because of he wouldn't release the ball every time. He was just, ever since that Napoli game where he made the great solo run, he has not made a right pass. You know, everything's been just trying to dribble, trying to beat the two guys or whatever, and he's failed most of those times. You know, he's gotten past a few of them, and that's what's continued this mentality that he can do it. But at the end of the day, it's not the right choice for the team, and he needs to recognize that. Obviously, if he's gone, then it doesn't matter anymore. But, yeah, I was happy with CDK when he came on. I wish he got more minutes. A game like this where it doesn't matter, you give Brahim the sending off, but you also give CDK more than – how many minutes did he get? 20?
Something.
Yeah, it might have been less than that, yeah. I'll throw it back to the starting lineup. Given that we had nothing to play for and everything, I say nothing to play for, people are going to bitch about that, but you know what I mean. Like, we didn't have any more targets left to hit. Would you have liked to see more changes? Instead, he went with an unchanged 11 compared to the team that beat Juve. Some people were calling to see maybe CDK in the 10 role, Salamaka start on the right. Maybe we get a final look at Franks in the midfield because Krunic apparently had some physical problems the day before the game. Maybe could have had a look at Gabir even, or, you know, ahead of the summer, you can make a final assessment before you know whether to sell or keep these players. Were you disappointed there were no changes?
Yeah, yes, I was.
Well, sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was expecting to see a lot of the bench players playing, but I feel like he wanted to give the players a sending off in front of the home fans. If it was away, maybe we would have seen more changes. I would have liked to see the subs come earlier, though, because we had nothing, you know. So
I disliked a couple of things. One sub with Mirante, hated that. I genuinely don't understand it.
Didn't like the Falcon punch.
First of all, he's extending, so he's not going anywhere. Yeah. He's the one who's staying, and he's also third.
The announcer made it sound like he was leaving.
Yeah.
He extends, and he's third choice. Appearance. Third choice. He's going to stay. Whatever. Ignore that one. Macias was – I understand, and I think Brahim actually deserved a start for this. Despite he might be alone and all that, and he might be a frustrating player, I think he earned the right considering how he was a key contributor to the title last season. He was very big in these matches against the top sides this year too. So I think he warranted that one. Macias, I don't understand. I haven't understood a start for him the past few months, when Salamakers has been playing well. And again, he gets an assist today, or yesterday. That was the only one. But, I mean, at this point, I think it was wishful thinking to hope that Pioli would sub on the players that we'd want to see, because he hasn't done it all year. So to think that he would do it on the final day was just, I guess, silly on our end.
Yeah, but I agree with what you're saying. Like, when Pobega came on for Krunic was hurt. So that one's like, all right, I get bringing Pobega on, but like Ollie said, you could have given Vronks a sending off. He got barely any minutes this entire season.
After the Roma game, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, he's alone and it doesn't sound like he's going to stay, so maybe it's like, who cares? Because it's not like he had enough minutes to build that relationship with the fans, so maybe could have given to someone else, but I don't know. I just never want to see Pobega play. I even tweeted, like, watching Pobega play is what I imagine hell to be like, because it really is just awful. He just runs around like a fucking tractor and he just hits things.
Il Trattore, CDK, I was a good nickname.
Yeah, there you go. CDK, obviously I wanted to come on, and I do think Brahim should have got the sending off. I just wish he got more minutes to really do something. because he looked bright when he came on. And I think he knew that this was quite literally the final opportunity to score a goal this season, and he still failed. One thing I did notice was, like, yeah, he had that great chance at the end where it's goodbye, but he'll set the players up, and he'll do a great job with that in great spots, but then he stays right where he is instead of making that next move. Mm-hmm. Like, there was an opportunity where he was inside the box a little before the penalty spot, and he passed it back, I want to say, to Rafa, who was just outside the edge of the box. And Rafa looked to give it back, but CDK didn't move at all. And so Rafa then had to cut left, or whoever it was. I think it was Rafa. But if he would just move a little bit more, he could obviously put himself in a better position. So I thought that was interesting. Florenzi for Calabria, like, what the fuck is that about? You know, I don't care about Florenzi. Does anyone?
Well, I think Florenzi's going.
I think Isaac. I think it's because Isaac was in attendance.
Maybe.
And he's the only one who bought a Florenzi jersey.
Right. So,
did he really?
Yeah. Before it was a permanent deal.
Florenzi's family bought a jersey. But yeah, he was there. He got to see that.
The Morata one, though, just to touch on that real quick, it's obviously seemed like he was leaving afterwards. And in fact, I even got a notification from FotMob that said Morata leaving as free agent. And then, of course, we're renewing, which I don't mind the renewal. I think it makes sense. You need the homegrown players, you need the Italian players, and a third choice goalkeeper. Like, okay, that's an easy one. Low wage, it's there. You take up that spot, you're good. Better than fucking Davis Vasquez, who we never saw taking up a non-EU spot, you know? At least this helps something.
Center for Zlatan's send-off. That was unbelievable.
On God, dude, it panned past him like three times, and it took everything in me to figure out who it was. I could not figure it out. I was like, who is this? Is this a youth player? Like, it can't be Zlatan's son. They don't look alike, but then it hit me, Davis. So I think maybe there was like a bonus or something, maybe Marathi's contract. Like, if you make one appearance, because he third choice keeper, you don't expect to play at all. So I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of. But
I was just about to say, actually, if everything goes to plan next season, Mirante will not play a single game. So that might be his first and last appearance for us. And maybe he literally did it to be like, well, fuck it, you can have one appearance to your name because you probably won't play next season.
I want to know if that count as a clean sheet for him, because he didn't concede a goal, but the team did.
There's a rule about clean sheets. They have to play more than 60 minutes, I believe it is, to be attributed to them. But his first action to come out like 15 yards from his goal and try and falcon punch across and completely miss it. I mean, I'm surprised he didn't injure himself. He is 62 years old. Second half then, 5 minutes to go, just as it looks as though Verona... sort of playing out. They started to push forward a little bit more at this stage, and they were leaving space on the break. But they're basically playing out the rest of the game, hoping to hear that Roma have scored a winner against Spezia. And that did end up coming in added time. But it was after they'd fallen 2-1 behind to us. Incredible goal from Liao. I wrote a couple of things on the website about how it was like a passing of the baton moment when you've got Zlatan on the sidelines, who before has been not just the leader of the attacking department, but the leader of the entire club, sat on watching as Liao basically takes everything on his shoulders and says, okay, fine, I'll win us this game. Celebrates his renewal in the best possible way, which became official. We'll come on to that. But yeah, lovely goal. Picked up the ball from his own half, took it on a trademark run down the middle, sweeping shot, bottom left corner. Thank you very much for coming. Nice goal. One of his better ones this season.
Yeah, I mean, it was trademark Rafa, just doing everything himself. Like, can't complain too much. I think Tomori got the assist. Like, that's how far back the pass was. I mean, like, it was all Rafa. It is what it is. I love that he gave a hug to Zlatan at the end. That was nice. It was cool. It was a good little sending off. But yeah, not much else to say about it. Just
where's that finishing all year, man? It's an incredible finish. It's incredible. That was that's his best finish, in my opinion, that he's had on a singular shot. His first.
Okay.
That one was just, it's outside the box. He's really trending towards the right side, and he kind of crossed his body a little bit. It just, everything about it, he read it perfectly. Because even, I think, last week against Juve, he has a fantastic run. I forget who he crossed up, and the shot's not even close to being on target. And you're like, if you can just consistently get that on target or give yourself an opportunity to score those, he's gonna win a Ballon d'Or one day if he's capable of doing that. Like, that's like, if his team has the proper season in which they're winning the trophies that stack up with it, like, that's everything you need. I that that's clearly the best player. Well, obviously since Zlatan at his peak, but that's the level he's capable of being at. Because if the finishing isn't great and he's still getting 15 open play goals, that it's truly incredible. So I hope that's something he works on this summer.
Especially from the wing.
Players around him who are going to help finish. Because right now, teams know that if they defend Rafa, we've got nothing else, right?
Yes. Yeah. Good to see him finish it what you would call near post as well, as you kind of highlighted there. He's tended to go to the far post every time, and sometimes he just bends them high and wide. But I think he's probably been working on that, and hopefully next season we see more of his game. I actually thought the second goal that he scored was it got me out of my seat a little bit more, let's put it that way. It was another break. By this point, Verona are kind of defeated. The news has come through. They're signalling from the bench that Roma had gone 2-1 up, so they knew at this point that they were going to be heading into a playoff, presuming they lost their game. Caught them on the break again. Another Rafa run down the middle. Lovely 1-2 with Salamakers. And like how you were saying, AJ, about how De Ketelaere passes a ball and then just stands there. It was good to see a bit of chemistry between Liao and Salamakers to know where he was going to run through. Mm-hmm. Picked up the ball, dropped the defender, dropped Montipo, who had a really good game up until those last two goals. And slotted it into an empty net. I thought that was a nice bit of composure.
I thought it was one of the most disrespectful goals I've ever seen. I loved it. You know, he, again, runs the pitch, makes a cute little pass to Salamakers at the end. He just gets it right back, just dribbles around two defenders, dribbles around the goalkeeper, walks it in, and then decides to shoot at the last second. But he could have, I mean, could have just kept walking it, and it was going straight in. That was and then for his celebration, I don't know what it was, but it looked like he was like walking a dog. And I don't think that's what it was. I don't think Rafa's that type of disrespectful guy, but that's the one I'm taking it because that shit was fire. It was weird. I mean, he's just like walking like this. Like, what does that even mean other than holding a lead for a dog, you know? So to me, I'm like, all right, that's fucking fire. Like, I want to see that every week, but yeah.
I was just looking for CDK, hoping that he was just going to tap it over to him, so you just walk it in. But CDK,
well, Giroud was right next to him, and if that was CDK, well, yeah, I would have gave it to him. I guarantee it, because he tweeted the "It's coming, bro." Remember, he's been saying like CDK is getting a goal, and he didn't. So, which is so interesting. Didn't he get a hat trick in his first preseason game too?
CDK,
yeah,
yes, he did. Yeah, but it was when we beat like some farmer side from like local.
Yeah, I was gonna say if we just added like Isaac with the four of us, and that's who they played. I just wiped that from my mind. The only thing I remember from preseason is just Adley being incredible, and the player camera. I forget what team we played. That's the only thing I remember. Otherwise, I was like, this summer is hell. So
that's another thing. I'm surprised Adley didn't get any time.
Are you? Are you though?
I mean, no.
Yeah. You're not.
Fair enough.
You're not. Yeah. The most minutes he played this season was actually against Verona, I believe.
I don't understand what Pioli has against him. Maybe it's his full head of hair. Maybe it's every waiter at his party was bald. You know,
was he at the party, Pioli?
No.
Yeah, he was a waiter. He was one of the bald waiters.
I don't know if he was, but so Adley did two of those dinners back to back, right? He did two of those team dinners.
No, he was just boasting about it more.
Yeah, they released. Okay. So he hired an official photographer, and the official photographer released the photos a few days afterwards, and then like Ben says, whacking him on his thing. But Pioli apparently, when he gives the team days off, he also takes a day off and goes cycling up to like Parma and stuff, where he's originally from. So I think he likes to separate himself a little bit. So maybe he was invited and just didn't show up. I don't know. Or maybe the bald waiter thing is something.
I'd rather see Buffon not make it this way.
Except for Tata. Tata was all by himself on the couch. He was the only one not hanging out with
deep
everyone.
In conversation about something as well. I bet he's an interesting bloke. Anyway, my favourite send-off was Ante Rebic's personally. Let's just leave him out of the squad for the last three games. That to me is the actions of a man who is perhaps not pulling his weight in training.
I don't know how we plan on selling him for 15 million if we're not even going to call him up to the squad. Like, how are we banking on that?
I was hoping for 8 or 9, to be honest with you.
I was hoping for 3. Like,
I don't know if we're going to get anything.
I don't either. I think we're going to release his contract, to be honest with you. I think it's another departure for no money. But I don't know. That's a bad one. And I hope the market doesn't come down to we are waiting on the departure of Rebic so that we can afford, you know, X, Y, and Z big name strikers that we've been linked with. Because we've been linked with a ton of people of name value.
That's going to be their excuse.
Of course it is. Of course.
Well, and they do need to get better at selling players, but it is tough to offload Shite. When I saw 15 mil, I presume there was a decimal missing. I'd be more like 1.5 region. And he's got quite a high salary as well. It's 3.5 million net for a player that's like scored 3 goals this season, 4 goals last season. It's going to be tough to get rid of him. I just hope he does have a market in the Bundesliga. Tops and flops then. And then we'll move on to what happened after the game. Liao was the top for me. He was the match winner. As I said before, it did feel like a symbolic moment, the kind of the passing over of the keys of the baton to him after his contract renewal, pledging his future to the club. 2 lovely goals, 3 points. Happy days.
Yeah, I mean, I think, should we all just say it in unison? Like, it's got to be Rafa top, I think. I don't know who else comes close. But
I think the biggest point Oliver hit on was it was right after his contract signing. And what we've seen in the past, like, 5 contracts, whenever someone signs, they have a shit game. So he kind of broke that cycle.
Very true.
He did for like 80 minutes, by the way. Then just decided to show up for the last few.
You know,
good on him. Good on him.
It takes a few minutes to score a goal or a few seconds.
The flop for me was Calabria. I'm afraid he switched off for the goal. That's all I have. I mean, Ciao and Tomori looked shaky in a couple of moments, but I can't quite give it to them because they weren't as involved in the goal that could have cost us 2 points and even further worsened our record against teams in the bottom half. So, I'm going to go with Calabria as a captain. You cannot switch off in a moment like that, especially after a substitution. It's your job to organise the troops. So, he was still like a 5.5 out of 10, though. I don't think anybody was awful.
Too high.
Look, that's it. I hate agreeing with you for both picks, but there are no other options, you know.
I was gonna do Brahim. It was his last game, and he's been looking like shit, but you think he'd want, you know, to leave a good taste in everyone's mouth, but he just, you know, shit the bed again.
Well, I think that's why he wasn't passing, because he wanted to leave on a high note, which I guess you can't blame him for that, but also
stab him in the back though, right?
Yeah.
Calabria too, offensively, there was one play where in the first half where he completely scuffs the shot wide. Like, it's just it's terrible technique. It's awful. It's awful. And that's why I was stunned after the cross. It's the best of his career. He's never going to have a better assist in his life. That one that he had to.
The Giroud one?
I'm not even kidding. Yeah, that's it. That's the he is incapable of it. And I would have loved to have seen Kalulu on the right. He's a better right back. I'm sorry. I don't care what people tell me. I'm standing by this. This guy is. When I saw that list or that report that was released this past week, right when they're talking about all the players that are deemed untouchable in the 11, and they listed Calabria, I almost had a heart attack.
He's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. Romagnoli is the same thing, but like, he's our captain. He came from the youth club. Like, he's also like definitely not our worst player, right? Like,
he's
Back. Is not going to win you games.
But he is helping us drop points and lose games. So
I wasn't going to say that because a right back wins
you games. I get what you're saying. I agree with you. I don't mean to harp on the guy, but like, it's just, when's the standard going to be raised for the captain? If we're harsh on guys who wear the number 10 jersey or other numbers, when is it going to be the standard that the guy that's the captain supposed to be? It just,
your captain's not supposed to be the best player on the pitch. They're supposed to be the best leader on the pitch.
And he's not a good leader.
I
don't know his leadership quality.
The standard for captain will be raised when we change how we give the captain the armband. We give it based on appearances. And that doesn't make you a good leader just hanging out the most time, you know? So once we give to someone based off their performance or their actual leadership, then the quality will raise. Like, Mike Maignan's a better...
Tonali in like 2 seasons.
It'll be Tonali, Maignan, Teo. All those guys are better leaders than Calabria, you know? But Calabria's been here the longest. He's got the most appearances. You know, that's just what it comes down to.
I think, like, they think appearances means you know what it means to wear the shirt, right? But, it doesn't always equal that.
Of course not. And I get both mentalities of doing it. But sometimes you got to say no. Like, if you're spoiled for choice and you're like, oh, we just got so many fucking leaders in this team, then sure, give it to the guy who's been there the longest. That's what we did with, you know, the old generation where every player was a world-class star. But that's not the case anymore. And, you know, I think you should give to someone who can actually command respect from his teammates and actually rally the troops and give that added motivation to do stuff. Like Zlatan was not captain, but we know he was the leader of the team.
Yeah.
He just didn't play as much, but you give it to a guy like that, be it Maignan, be it Tonali, be it Teo, someone else. Like, Romagnoli was a quiet leader as well. He was a leader, but he was quiet and obviously got benched towards the end of the season. But I see Calabria going down a similar path. I just think until we have another Primavera player rise up to that starting quality, he's not going anywhere because we have to have those. So
he's coming. He's on his way.
Hopefully.
I think so.
Let's move on. Let's do the post-game stuff, shall we? We found out on the Saturday, basically, that it was going to be the farewell for Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I wanted to clarify something because a lot of people will have seen what was put out on our Twitter and then the clarification that arrived on that and then what happened afterwards. We got sent the photo from a fan who was doing the San Siro Stadium Tom on Friday. They spotted that graphic doing the rounds on the LED boards. We decided to post that up. We do have a relationship of sorts with the club. They do contact us about things that get posted for various reasons. They were like, can you take that down? The reason for that is because we were just testing it out. Nothing has been decided yet, but we needed to be prepared for all eventualities. That's actually from a few days ago. I said, fine, don't want to cause any problems. Isaac's in the press section tomorrow night. Don't want him getting turned away at the door. And then I said, can I publish that clarification then? And they said, yes, that's fine. So I put that out there. And then like a couple of hours later, the fact that it was his last game became public knowledge. The club put out a statement saying that there will be a ceremony after the game. But that's how it all played out. You might say that there was a bit of misleading involved there. You can be your own judges, but we just followed everything in the way that we were asked, and that is the way that it happened. Anyway, full-time whistle, players come back out, former guard of honour, a nice montage video plays on the screen of all Zlatan's best moments with us. He walks to the end of the line, past his teammates. He gives Maldini a hug, Massara a hug, and Giorgio Ferlani a hug, and Paolo Scaroni as well, I think. Gets presented with an autographed shirt as the fans chant his name, and the theme song from Gladiator, I believe it was, plays out around the stadium. And then he just starts crying, and then everyone starts crying. It was pretty special, man.
Yeah. I was trying to explain it to my girlfriend who was watching that with me, but I was unable to get words out. I was like, you know, I was doing that the whole time. So I just think the saddest part about it is that the goodbye and, you know, the signed jersey and all that, it's just going to be immortalized with this god awful new home jersey for next season. I think that's the worst thing that could happen. But jokes aside, you know, that was a very big moment, I think, just in the sport. I mean, you see, in making the rounds everywhere, you know, there's so many champions that were crowned yesterday, and Zlatan's goodbye is being talked about over all of them. So regardless of how you feel about the guy as a person or as a player, like you cannot deny his significance to the sport over the last four decades. I mean, the guy's been playing since 99, only player to score in four different decades, oldest player to ever score in Serie A this season at 42 years old and some odd days. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what he's been able to accomplish in his life and his career is just nothing short of spectacular. He's got a goal catalog longer than the encyclopedia. I mean, he's done it all, minus win the UCL, which, you know, it is what it is there. If he would have got that, just imagine where he would have been. But, yeah, I mean, you look at our generation growing up, and it's Messi, Ronaldo, one and two. But I think Zlatan is a very clear third, and unfortunately it's not going to be acknowledged because of a few trophies he missed. But to tear his ACL, what, three times after 36 – to win a Scudetto after all that, to go to the MLS, everyone saying he's done, that's the end of his career, and scoring 55 goals in 52 games in the U.S., like, that's a crazy return regardless of the league. You know, that's insane, especially at his age. And then to come back and take us from the absolute trenches to the top. You only wish he retired at the end of last season instead, but I don't think he would have been able to given the celebrations and, you know, being a Sassuolo. I think this was a beautiful goodbye. And, you know, I wish him nothing but the best. And I hope he sticks around as a manager or in management. Sorry, not as the manager of the team.
Oh, as the manager.
If he wants to, he can do it. You know?
I mean, I based on everyone's reaction, I would have thought he would have won us like 6 Champions League trophies or something.
Shut up.
You know, the man won us 3 trophies in 2 different spells.
It's pretty good.
I think people are more upset about his leadership.
Yeah, so basically Maradona and Napoli. So
basically
I think
Maradona and Napoli. So name the stadium after him, put a statue up of him out front, and we can cling to him for the past, 50 years or so?
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens with the new stadium, to be honest.
Wow. I only have a few minutes here, so I just want to comment on it real quick because Maddie is the ultimate poo-pooer. But I think the whole thing in general, that whole ceremony was great because even they didn't put it in the full video afterwards, but What Got You So Mad had it on his Twitter account where he was chirping back at the Verona fans saying that this was the biggest moment of their season, was going to see him in his retirement ceremony. The fact that he gets a chirp off in one of the 6 languages that he speaks in is incredible because everybody gets on their knees for McGregor. Sorry, Torger, for all that stuff. But it's true, though. I mean, just everything he did was, everybody knows, right after the turning point was that 5-0 loss against Atalanta. He comes back, and I think it was against Sampdoria, in which he scored against. And then right from there, they took off. Everything turned around, whether it was formation or the younger players that were getting an opportunity to play under Pioli. They all say it. Pioli even mentioned it post-match yesterday on how he changed the mentality. Even for himself, he helped the manager become better at his job. And when you have someone that is at that level and his age where he only has limited time to give you on the pitch and especially in training, because he can't even train half the time because he's hurt. So the fact that he was there and changing and helping all these players now, who knows where this club would be without him joining? Because it could, maybe they do get to the point that they're at now, but it probably would take a lot longer than it did. Because the entire turnaround, I think, for me on the pitch starts when he joins. And it doesn't, like, you know, it doesn't happen without him. There just isn't. If you think he's overpaid or not, yeah, maybe, because he definitely didn't play enough for it. But everything he did, and it's special when you get a player like that who had options. Like, let's be real here. He could have gone to multiple people. Like, we're seeing Benzema go to Saudi Arabia now. Was he going to get, like, $200 million a year? Like, Zlatan easily could have gotten more money there. He could have stayed in MLS if he really wanted to as well. They definitely didn't want to let go of him. So to see that happen and go back to a place where he didn't want to leave in the first place, he mentioned how we gave him happiness when he joined the first time. I think he gave happiness to a lot of fans again because we were miserable for years. For a very long time, it was not enjoyable to watch this team and to watch this sport, in my opinion. So I thought when he returned, he really gave back that sense of joy. So thank you to him. Screw Maddie for what he's saying, but he's the man, and kudos to him. And thanks for having me on, fellas, but I gotta jet.
Thank you for joining, mate. So obviously some of the comments that he said after the game, as Martino kind of mentioned there, he said, the first time I arrived at Milan, you gave me the second time you gave me love. He thanked the fans, he thanked the directors, he said that the fans made him feel at home. He'll be a Milanista for life. The time has come to say goodbye to football, but not to you. Some interesting stuff in there. Were you surprised that he's retired fully from the game? Because there were all kinds of rumours that he might head to Monza or he might head to, like, Hammarby or...
Yeah, I was, because I obviously don't speak Italian, so watching it live, there weren't subtitles. And I must have missed that part. I caught the goodbye to football, not to you, but I didn't recognize that was like a all football sort of deal. I thought he was like saying goodbye to us, you know, like as a Milan football. So yeah, it definitely caught me off guard with all the rumors going around, and it almost seems symbolic with Atalanta smashing Monza you know, 4-2, 5-2, whatever it was. It was like, oh, here we go again, you know. And he absolutely could have continued if he wanted to. Well, actually, probably not. I think he physically was pretty done. Yeah, it was just – it was good. That was how it should have been. But I think we want to go more in-depth on the bonus.
I don't know why he would continue unless, like, he needed money, right? Like, his body's had it. He came back to his happy place. He won them a league trophy. Like
– Can't do much more.
Fairy tale ending.
Why go to Monza, right? Like, maybe go back to Malmo where he started. I could see, like, maybe. But that's where he started, right?
Malmo. Yeah. They hate him now, but that's another story.
Well, he owns, like, their rival or something. He's going to, like, tear another ACL if he continues to play and he's 40. Like, and you know he's not the kind of guy who's just going to go sit on the couch. He's like a ninth degree black belt. So, like, he doesn't want his body to be completely broken.
He basically said as well in the he did a press conference after Pioli spoke, and he said that he'd only decided to retire in the last 10 days. He gave an interview with Gazzetta dello Sport on Saturday, so the day before the game. And he admitted that he decided when he gave that interview that he was going to retire. But in that interview, he said he wants to keep playing. So he didn't want anyone to know, basically, before he was ready to announce it. So I thought that was quite an interesting and clever footnote. But yeah, he basically said he needs to take a bit of time to reflect on his career and his achievements. And then just digest everything, which is absolutely fair enough. Then he says that whatever he goes into next, he's going to throw himself into because he wants to feel like he can make a difference. He didn't really close any doors to anything. It might be that he takes a year out to focus on getting fully better physically. Then we'll see what the future holds for him. But that was a really, really emotional evening. And in a weird way, the season, whatever you might give it out of 10, some people are giving it a 5 because of how bad it was domestically. Some people are giving it higher because of the run in Europe. That win and that ceremony at the end made me feel like the season was, it gave us something. You know, it didn't give us a trophy, but it gave us something. There was some form of closure at the end of it. But next season it has to be trophies.
I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, our team is in no position to compete in two fronts. We just don't have the depth. We made the Champions League semifinal. We all, like, all of our expectations was round of 16, look competitive. Like, that was what our expectations were, and a mandatory top 4 finish. We got both those. We got a handicap in there, but, you know, in 3 years, only one team is going to remember the handicap. And one salty fan who's going to continue to bring it up, me, because we shouldn't have needed it. But, you know, so when you look at that, it was a successful season. No matter if we win a trophy or not, Champions League is mandatory to continue to grow. So that's what we got. And hopefully Jerry opens up his pocketbooks a little bit and gives us a few signings.
I actually agree with everything you said. I think for the first time in a while on the podcast, because you've just been trying to be controversial lately. But you know, you're absolutely spot on. Like, the goal was compete for the Scudetto and make it to at least the knockouts of the Champions League. No one expected us to make it to a semifinal. As we all know, if you would have told someone at the end of last season that this year we would finish top 4 and in the semifinals, we all would like lose our minds. And that's incredible. So happy. Now, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, there's the asterisk of, you know, without the 10-point deduction, Juve would have been above us. Fine, whatever. That's reality. You got to accept it. But also, at the end of the day, it's not our fault they cheated and got a deduction. So it is what it is. You could look at the Champions League run and say, okay, we obviously had a favorable group because of finishing with the Scudetto last season. But again, like, well, that's the whole point of winning the title is being pot one, and you get the better group. That's how it goes. And then you could say, sure, we got a favorable run with Spurs and Napoli and arguably Inter if we would have made it to the final versus the other half, where if we'd have finished top of our group where Chelsea did, we would have faced Dortmund and then Real Madrid. And, you know, maybe we wouldn't have made it to the semifinal. But at the end of the day, you can't dwell on, you know, being lucky and counting that as a negative. Like, luck is a huge part of sports and this sport in particular. So, you know, the way that chips fall is just the way it falls. And at the end of the day, we accomplished our goal. It was rough and it took us longer than we wanted it to. And we had a really poor 2-3 months of the season that took us from nearing a repeat or at least a strong title defense to push this out towards the end of the season to needing a last minute, you know, lifeline to get top four. So I do think there's two ways to look at the season, and the critical way to look at it really means you got to look more at the current squad, the manager and Pioli, and what we do in the transfer window. But like you said, 3-4 years from now, no one's going to remember any of that. They're just going to say, okay, you made it to the semifinal of the Champions League. Yeah. I wish we got the Coppa Italia. I think losing when we did to Torino in the Coppa Italia was really bad. That was embarrassing. But like, Napoli lost that same round to Cremonese, but they got away with it because they won the Scudetto.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
We don't. We didn't win it. Inter won it. You know, Inter had two trophies this season, playing for a third. If they do a cup treble, then, you know, that overrides everything that Napoli did this season. And we're not in a position to override anyone to do anything. Like, we have work to do, and that's what this summer is going to be all about.
Yeah, it is a massive summer. The Curva actually put out a banner. Whether you agree with when they put pressure on or not, I personally thought that this was a good banner. They said, another season has passed. Now it's time for the transfer window. We want the leap in quality. Basically echoing the words of Maldini, where he said investments needed to get the squad able to compete in two fronts. Good that... that there's, you know, everybody has a bit of ambition, needs to be better than this season. We need to win a trophy per season, ideally, if not more. Let's do some questions then, and then we'll round off. As mentioned at the start of the episode, our bonus this week is going to be on Zlatan, so I'm going to respectfully ignore any of the questions that have come in on them, because we'll probably discuss it there. First question comes from Kevian, so Best Boss 85 and Keviano both ask about the possibility of signing Ilkay Gundogan from Manchester City. The link came about.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I think he's pretty close to agreeing terms with Barca, and also City did offer him a 3-year contract. Like, Fab confirmed that. So I don't think he's going to us. There was a link. There was a weird link from the director of
Corsport. Yeah,
of Corsport, which... you know, take that how you want. But he said, I know something that I can't reveal. He'll be in Milan on specifically June 12th. Like, to throw out a specific date is a ballsy claim. Obviously, it's so easy in fake journalism to just say, oh, you know, it was right at the time, but then things changed, and, you know, move on about your day. That's the way Italian newspapers operate. But
yep,
I want to get your hopes up.
Yeah. Look,
we all got our hopes up on Saturday, and then things drastically changed.
Yes, correct.
That's true. Gundogan could play pretty much anywhere he wants. You know, if Manchester City are offering him a 3-year deal and they're hopefully about to be crowned the best team in Europe, and they're giving him a 3-year contract, therefore, until he's 35 years old, that means he can play pretty much anywhere. To think he could come to us is a pipe dream. The 1% hope that we can cling on to is the fact that he has a particular attachment to Italy. He got married last year in Italy and his kid was born in Milan. So if something comes out about that and how his wife, who's a model, really wants to live in the city, and I don't know, maybe, but I think it is a really difficult deal. If we pulled that off, though, it would be the signing of the summer for any Serie A team instantly, because he's still one of the best midfielders in the world, without a doubt. Michael Gambino asks, who is your top choice for right wing? And with Diaz leaving, would you invest that money on Milinkovic-Savic? So two-part question there.
Yeah, I would definitely go for Milinkovic-Savic. I don't think anyone will say no to that deal. My idea for the right wing is a profile that I think people will say no to, but Di Maria, he's leaving Juve. You know, it's a free. He wants Europe. He said he wants to still play in the Champions League. He wouldn't have to move very far. He could still do that. Obviously, Benfica's calling for him, and, you know, going back home would be great for him, but if he wants to make an actual run, like, we've proven we can make it to the semifinals, which I think is much more of a bargaining chip for players than we realize. Regardless of how we got there, we were there. So I think that would do it. I think he was their best player this season, and he could slot in perfectly with a team that has a proper left wing with a team that has Champions League ball, hopefully with a better striker up front next season as well. I think it would work out very well for both parties. So,
yeah.
There's been some links to Berardi, and I don't like. I think it would be a bit of a cop out signing, because he's 28 years old now. It doesn't really fit with what we're trying to do in terms of a youth project. It falls between the kind of players that we've been signing recently. But having called to sign more players in their prime, you can't really argue with the numbers that he's put up. I just don't think he convinces anyone in big game situations. We've been linked with, obviously, Marco Asensio, who is now going to PSG. Hakim Ziyech has been linked again, but look, how many windows is this going to happen, and he's not going to be close to joining. I just don't think that the name has come out yet, you know, for the right wing spot. Same with the striker spot. I think all the same names have been in circulation. We don't seem to be getting closer to any of them. So it wouldn't surprise me if someone just came out of nowhere and it's like, bang, we've agreed a deal for this player. Zhigrova of Lille is an interesting one because of all the stuff going on with the fine and how we might be owed a player from them. That's on the website if you want to read up more on it. Zaniolo, I was not keen on in January. I'm still not massively sold now, but can't argue that he's done very well since moving to Turkey. But again, question marks about the standard there. And yeah, I would go Milinkovic-Savic. if there is any way to get him in, allocate whatever of the budget within reason, up to 30 mil maybe, to bring in a real difference maker like that who is in their prime. And obviously he's capable of contributing goals and assists. Abhijit Mohan asks, can you take an early shot at how you think our team will look next season and what our objectives should be? bare minimum objectives. That's a good question.
I think our bare minimum objectives should be exactly what they were this season. Top four and minimum round of 16. I think we need to make a cup run. I think that'd be nice as well. But to predict what the team's going to look like already, and the season ended yesterday.
Oh, because like, that was not even open.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, but I mean, it's going to look a little bit different on the wing. It's going to look a little different up top. It's going to look really different in the midfield and probably the same everywhere else. So
I'm agreeing with AJ where it's going to be really hard to predict what the team is going to look like, because as we can see, like Saturday, it's like Gundogan, he's coming now. No, he's, you know. Second, top four is a must. I'm going to even say quarterfinals of the Champions League. Like, we made it to the semifinals. So, like, round of 16. Like, if we get tasked with, like, City or Real Madrid, you know, there's some leniency there where it's like, well, you know, we didn't have a chance, right?
Yeah.
But we also have to make a cup run. We have to play in a cup final or win the league.
I think our objective going into every season should be to win a trophy. Now, as AJ kind of alluded to, a lot of luck is needed in sport and in particular football. So when you're in cup competitions like the Coppa Italia and the Champions League, you do need a favourable draw sometimes to be able to progress deep into the competition and have a chance of winning it. We haven't won the Coppa Italia since 2003, so it'll be over 20 years. Doesn't seem like it's our thing, but it's still inexcusable because we've had favourable brackets in the past and completely fucked it.
We've been to the final plenty in recent years.
Yeah, I was at two of them. Never goes well against Juve. And I think in the league, a top four finish is obviously a minimum, but I would like to see us challenge for the title again. And I do think there is a difference because you've seen this season we finished fourth but didn't challenge for the title. Whereas I would like to push whoever it is close next season. And why can't it be us? I mean, I wrote a feature on the website, go check it out, about how this summer could actually be a big opportunity for us, because we might be the only team that has some stability. You know, we might go into next season with Pioli, Maldini, Massara, Cardinale all on the same page. We bring in some signings that actually make a difference. We have a bit of squad depth. We can rotate properly. And then you've got Inter, who might have to sell some star players despite reaching the final. You've got Juve, who are basically going to overhaul the whole board. Don't know if Allegri's going to be there. They're going to lose big players. Napoli have lost their head coach, sporting director. Osimhen could go. Kvara could go. Kim could go. Atalanta, Gasperini's hinted about leaving them. Mourinho said he's staying at Roma, but like they never strike me as being a title contender. I still think they're some way off that. And then Lazio, God knows what will happen with them. They'll probably lose a couple of key players, and Lotito never spends to replace them. So why can't we be the team that comes out through all of that, kind of like Napoli did last season somehow into this season, and just
win? Why? Because we have Jerry Cardinale as our
Give him a summer. That's all I'll say. Let's give him a summer. I think he deserves, because who knows? Like, what if there's a report that comes out tomorrow morning saying, oh, that meeting was actually Jerry telling Maldini he's made 100 million available. Are we all going to bitch like fuck about him? Or are we all going to turn our guns on Maldini and say, well, you better spend it properly, otherwise it's
you. No, I don't want, first of all, like, a budget is like all like hearsay, right? Like, we don't know if there's actually a budget. Yeah. What I want him to say is, hey, I want to make this team competitive. You do what you have to do, present me with what you think is going to be the best deal, and then we make a decision, right? I don't want there to be like, this is how much you have to spend. Go do what you want. No, make the best business decision for the team to be competitive on the field. Don't set a limit, right? Obviously, you're not going to go out there and spend $300 million like Chelsea does in like a week and a half, because that's just not realistic. But like, you know, I hate like this whole transfer budget bullshit. Like,
yeah, it's not how it works. It's always flexible. There's sales. Right. There's yeah.
I mean, Maddie's right. Like, well, there is a budget, but we'll never know the budget.
Say this twice. AJ has now said this twice in one podcast that I'm right.
You're right. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, never mind. I take it all back. But look, there is a budget. We will just never know the budget, and it's not going to be like, it's not a game of Monopoly. You know, he doesn't have like, okay, this is the money for the transfer. Use it however you want. Like, it's going to be, this is the amount we could spend before we get in trouble. It could go up if you sell players. It could go down if you don't, you know, and we're not going to spend the whole budget. We're probably not going to go over the budget. We might not even go under. Who knows? Like, we don't know where it's going to end up. And it's never going to come out. Like, Maldini's not going to say, Jerry told me I could spend up to this amount. And Jerry's not going to say, I told Paolo he could spend this much. You know, we'll never hear that. So at the end of the window, we could look at it. And if we spent a lot, then we'll say, Jerry gave Maldini the keys, and now it's Maldini's fault if it fails. If he doesn't spend a lot, it could still be Maldini's fault. But yes, most people are going to say, Jerry didn't give him enough money. So unless we succeed next season, fans are going to cry about the window. I'm going to throw a fit. I know I will. There's going to be times where I'm like, we're the greatest team in the world. And then there's going to be times where I'm like, fuck this whole organization into the ground. You know, that's the life of a passionate fan, we'll say.
Yeah.
I
think the absolute imperative above all else, before you even start talking about transfer budget and gaps in the squad and all that kind of stuff, the absolute one must moving forward, and I said this last week, there needs to be a face-to-face discussion between the three M's, Moncada, Maldini, Massara, Jerry Cardinale, the CEO, Ferlani, and there needs to be absolute synergy and cohesion on what we're trying to do here. Like, what are the parameters of players that we're looking to bring in? It needs to be purely saying, there's this gap in my squad. These are the kind of profiles that I think would fit best for my style of play. If we're backing him, this is, let's presume we are. Then it's up to Moncada to go out and scout the potential players, Maldini Massara to negotiate with them, Ferlani to sign off the deals. Like, but there needs to be cohesion. Like, there can't be differences in opinion where you've got your technical director going out after we've lost against Inter in the Champions League and saying, well, we could have signed Dybala, but the owners didn't want to. That can't happen. Like, there needs to be everyone on the same page. Otherwise, what's the fucking point? Let's wrap it up there, shall we? We've been going for nearly an hour. Hope you enjoyed this season ending episode, everybody. I'll mention it one more time in the bonus episode this week. We're going to be talking about Zlatan, our favorite memories of him, the impact that he's had on the club since his return. So be sure to check that one out. We're hoping to do him justice. Still to decide whether Maddie's going to be on that yet, if he's going to be negative like he was earlier.
No, be positive.
Good. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, watch the bonus podcast to hear Madison say one nice thing about Zlatan for the first time ever. Probably the last. So, yeah, Twitter 45.
Listen, I just don't think he's the Messiah, all right? But I look forward
to it.
He's not the Messias either.
As always, like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. Drop us a rating on your favorite podcast platform. Be sure to get involved with the discussion in the comment section or replying to tweets, what have you. And thank you very much to everybody who's listened throughout the course of the season. There's been ups, there's been downs, but we really thank you for your loyal listenership. And we will carry on recording throughout the summer. So, yeah, we'll catch you in a week's time.
Ante, ecco l'Anteante in area di rigore, Anteante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce l'ho da buono, ce l'ho da buono, ce l'ho da buono!